Today is Sunday, March 27, 2022. This is part 29 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart. Jim spells his last name H-A-G-G-A-R-T. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
Doing great, Tom. Thanks Super. For asking. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Jim, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, of course.
Thank you so much. We had spoken last time about some hikes that you had done in 2013, and at one point we started talking about Butchart Butte, and that's spelled B-U-T-C-H-A-R-T for Harvey Butchart. And I didn't realize that you had played a role in naming that butte for Harvey. We've talked about Harvey a number of times in our interview series here. Can you pick up the thread on how you got the idea maybe to name this butte for Harvey?
Well, sure. What a great story this is, Tom. And in preparation for today, this discussion, I actually went and kind of dug through a bunch of old emails and corresponded with people at USGS who had some additional information about the whole process. And so it's been a lot of fun piecing this together. What I'm going to tell you is based on, you know, my perspective of the way things unfolded, but I can interject other information that I've learned since that I received from people that I'll mention in the talk here. So,
okay.
So, yeah, and anyways, you know, you're hiking around in Grand Canyon, particularly in eastern Grand Canyon, over many decades. And, you know, if you're interested in summits, you look at these summits and you look up the names of the rocks, and you want to know more about who they're named after. And quite honestly, you know, in eastern Grand Canyon Park, particularly in the valley of Nankweep and Quaggan, there's a lot of summits up there that are named for actual people who really had nothing to do with Grand Canyon.
Hmm.
And,
can you give me an example of that?
Yeah, well, like a Coulter, I think, I can't recall exactly, but I think he might have been a Justice of the Peace in Phoenix. Or,
okay.
Burke Point, Novinger and Ehrenberg, Dupa, these are people that really didn't have much to do with Grand Canyon itself, but, you know, they were important people in Arizona history,
right,
that were commemorated by the, in large part by the early mappers, right, because it would have been the mappers who were naming these particular peaks as opposed to you know, the Powell route, who named more prominent peaks closer to the river, the Powell expedition, I mean, that named some peaks after mythological deities and things like that. So, there was a rationale for naming these buttes back in the day when the cartographers were producing the maps, you know, after these local citizens of importance in Arizona, but not particularly relevant to Grand Canyon, and I always thought, you know, of all the people who have had an impact in understanding and learning and helping us learn about the topographic development of Grand Canyon and its history of exploration, Harvey Butchart, you know, stands out as a sore thumb in that crowd. This is my thinking 30 years ago. Okay, I was doing this hiking and climbing in the park, and particularly in the eastern part of the park. And by that I mean the Nankoweap Valley down to say the Vishnu area. You know, that big swath of land there. It's my favorite part of the whole canyon.
Right.
And so I just thought, wouldn't it be neat if, you know, we could get something named after Harvey at the relevant time, you know, at the appropriate time. And so this was always in the back of my mind. And in 1997, we talked about this in July, I actually went to the North Rim on my own and did a solo hike of this really neat-looking butte that is out on the ridge east of Point Atoka. So it stands above Cochise and Gunther, to the east. Siegfried Pyre is just to the southwest of this butte, and it's a very prominent butte that I'd seen in many hikes in eastern Grand Canyon Park. You know, you can see it from the Nanquip Trail. You can actually see it from the highway up by Vermilion Cliff.
Right.
For just a few for a few kilometers along that highway, you can actually see this butte sticking up.
Right.
And so it has a tremendous visibility, and I just thought it'd be a great summit to go to. And so I went out there and climbed it, and I think we talked about this because it's the trip I forgot to bring the insoles of my shoes on, and so I was just hiking in these tennis shoes with no insoles in them,
right.
And it was extremely uncomfortable. But I did the 3-day trip and managed to get up this summit. And so at this time, I started thinking, this is a nice butte. It has a commanding view of the entire eastern part of the park. It's visible from Vermilion Cliffs on the north. Desert Tower on the south. You know, you have a great. It's very encompassing and commanding. And plus, on top of that, it's a really pretty white creamy sandstone Coconino Butte that sits on this long ridge of red supai beneath it. And as a result, it sticks way out. It's way out away from the rim compared to a lot of other high level buttes. So I started thinking, you know, this would be kind of cool if we could maybe name this after Harvey. Now, Harvey was still alive at that time.
Right.
Because he died in May of 2002. And I didn't say anything to Harvey. I didn't really have a whole lot of communication with Harvey because I didn't live in Arizona. And I had met him earlier on, and we had communicated earlier when I was kind of a novice hiker or beginning hiker in the Grand Canyon. And but of course, as I've mentioned in our previous discussions, he was a very fundamental influence in my hiking development and
mm-hmm.
and the way I look at hiking in the Grand Canyon. And so this idea was percolating in my mind, right? And so eventually then in 2002, Harvey did pass away, and I think it was May 29th or something like that. And so at that point, the clock started ticking because I had researched enough about how to name features, topographic features, to know that you needed to wait 5 years after somebody died before you could put in a proposal to name a topographic feature after them. And, you know, this used to be the case with postage stamps, too. And I think they've kind of dispensed with that now, that requirement. I know in other countries they put, you know, the Beatles on and all sorts of people. I'm not quite sure, but I think the U.S. has relaxed that standard in some cases. But in any event, in 2002, I started, you know, counting the clock down on a proposal to name this butte after Harvey Butchert. So. And I talked about this kind of informally with Art and Christensen and Bruce Grubbs, but no, never with anybody else, right? Because I didn't really have a whole lot of contact with the greater Grand Canyon hiking community during these times. I mean, I was pretty much on my own in Canada, and, you know, I wouldn't have been involved in the weekly get-togethers in Flagstaff or Grand Canyon Village or anything like that. So, yeah, it was pretty much just a proposal in my mind that I talked about on and off with Art and Bruce to a certain extent. So time passed, and in August of 2007, I started getting ready to put in the submission. And basically the way it worked was the USGS had a Board of Geographic Names, which is kind of co-administered with USGS, has an online portal where you can go in and propose a new name. And so you summarize the important information about the feature, you know, its precise location, coordinates. You know, if you know something about the geology, maybe you say something about that. The rationale behind who you're naming it for or what you're naming it for.
Okay.
Very basic information, not very substantial. You don't put together an extended proposal that summarizes all your facts or all your thinking. It's very straightforward, and the information goes into the online portal and gets downloaded there. So I did that in late August of 2007. And shortly afterwards, I got in early September, I got a reply from a fellow named Roger Payne at the Board of Geographic Names. And he basically said, thanks a lot for your proposal. You know, it's in the queue. We'll be considering it. And he says, these things sometimes take up to 8 months to process.
Okay.
And somewhat ominously, at the end of this email, he said, since the feature designated in the proposal is in a wilderness study area, the board's, that means the U.S. Board of Geographic Names,
mm-hmm.
the board's wilderness policy will be used in the evaluation. So, you know, I didn't know quite what that meant, but then I did a little bit of research, and I found out that the Board of Geographic Names wilderness policy is that they will not put, you know, erect new names for topographic features in designated wilderness areas or wilderness areas being studied, or mm-hmm. areas being studied for wilderness classification. So I thought, oh no, that sounds like it's a killer. You know, it's not gonna. That policy would preclude this name because Butchert Buttes, you know, the area below the rim there, and actually a lot of the plateau away from the highway, is all wilderness. It
yeah.
had been designated wilderness in the, I think in the 80s. And so it was very much in a wilderness area. And, you know, I thought, well, that doesn't sound like it's going to work, you know. And quite honestly, it kind of implied that you would not be able to designate or name a feature anywhere in Grand Canyon National Park after Harvey Butchert, or anybody else for that matter, right?
Right, because the wilderness study area is still in place. There is no congressionally designated wilderness for Grand Canyon National Park, surprising, still 50-some years after the Wilderness Act, 1964. I would assume that would be a non-starter because it is a wilderness study area, and that's where that butte is. So then what happened?
Well, but, you know, you say that, but there's some peculiarities because, you know, if you think back, there's the unusual Berry Butte, which is in the Grandview Mesa area,
okay.
and named after Bill Berry, who was an operator of the mines there and also of the trail.
Right.
And it, that was designated as a formal name in the 90s or early 2000s. There was Shellbach Butte.
That's right.
And then there's also Roosevelt Point on the North Rim. So, you know, features had slipped through the cracks. I shouldn't say slipped through the cracks, but there had been exceptions made to this policy.
Right.
You know, it could be that certainly Roosevelt Point, since it was like it's right there on the Rim Road, you know, that wouldn't necessarily qualify as wilderness. But certainly Berry Butte would seem to be in the
right, down at Grandview
area.
Certainly is, and Shellbach certainly is. Yeah.
So there were some exceptions, and I didn't really know what to think about it, but I did, you know, that was the initial correspondence I had with the U.S. Board of Geographic Names. So then it turns out that I started spending more time on the website for the Board of Geographic Names, and, you know, I think about that now because this is 15 years ago. And I think about, I spent more time on the website, you know, but 15 years before that, there probably wouldn't have been a website. And
that's
certainly
right.
15 years before that, when I was getting going as a Grand Canyon hiker, there wasn't even any internet, right?
Right.
Let alone personal computers. So, you know, the evolution of how we do our research has changed significantly since the early days when I was hiking in the Grand Canyon. But anyways, interesting aside. I started looking into how this naming process takes place in a little bit more of the bureaucratic detail. And so what happens is when a name is proposed, like as I did, then it gets listed in what's called the U.S. Bureau of Geographic Names Quarterly Review List. So Now, I think there's right now there's something like 450 or 500 of these lists that have been produced over the years, and basically every three months they produce this list of all the new names that came in, and I guess they probably vet them, the new name proposals.
Right.
I'm sure they vet them at some level to make sure they're not offensive or whatever, and then they'll publish them in this list, and so that's to alert the public that this name has been proposed and will be up for consideration in the coming months by the board. So that was good to see, because it definitely meant that this was officially in the system, you know, this proposal. So,
okay.
So in November, I was kind of nervous about this whole thing because of this policy, wilderness policy on names, right? And so in November, mid-November of 2007, I wrote to the executive secretary, because I hadn't really received anything other than just this perfunctory, almost like a form email stating that thank you for your proposal for a new name.
Right.
Well, we'll be considering it. So I tracked down a fellow named Lou Yost, who was the executive secretary.
Sorry, what was his name?
His name was Lou, L-O-U, Yost. Y-O-S-T.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was the executive secretary of the Domestic Names Committee at that time. So I wrote him an email. I just said, look, I sent in this proposal last August, and I'm just curious where it's at, and also if I can submit more information in support of it. I particularly mentioned letters of support, because I started thinking – you know, if it's just one person who's making this argument that this butte in a wilderness area should be named after a prominent hiker, that's easier to shoot down than if there's a whole bunch of people who are making, you know, the same suggestion. And particularly if it's over a technicality, like, well, our policy doesn't allow this. So I just thought, well, the more information I can throw at them, maybe the better it'll be, right? So what happened was Yost forwarded my request for information to Jennifer Runyon at USGS, who now Jennifer's with the survey, and again, which is kind of linked with the Board of Geographic Names, but the Board of Geographic Names includes representatives from a lot of other government agencies.
Jim?
The Coast Guard, even.
How do you spell Jennifer's last name?
Yeah, R-U-N-Y-O-N.
Thank you.
So Jennifer was extremely cooperative and very helpful, so she said that in her email that that the first thing that happens here when you have one of these proposal applications is that it goes to the local government, the state government first, and they you know give their thumbs up or down on this before the federal board will make its decision. So Jennifer said that. So this was in late November, you know, when I had response from her, and she said that the Arizona Board of Geographic and Historic Names had already discussed the Butchert Butte proposal on November 14th of 2007, but they did not vote on it because it was very preliminary. They didn't have any additional information that they thought was relevant and critical to making a decision on this. So, in particular, they wanted to get a Coconino County's perspective, and also the input of any of the American Indian tribes that might have comment on that. So basically, you know, this came up before the Arizona board on November 14th, and they said, now, you know, this is great, but we've got to do some more homework on this.
Mm-hmm.
We'll send out letters to people and make sure that, you know, we get this feedback from these other agencies, which they did. And so Jennifer has recently sent me a copy of a letter dated January 9th, 2008, where the Arizona State Board on Geographic Historic Names wrote to the Hopi tribe requesting feedback on this proposal. And they actually wrote to five different tribes, and although I don't have that correspondence, in other emails it says and letters that I have copies of, it says we wrote to five different different tribes, mm-hmm. and so to get their input. So they, you know, people are doing their background information, right, and checks and looking to fill in the gaps.
Right.
So at this time too, I was using this time to try and beef up the application. So what I learned from Jennifer was that, yeah, you submit this information in the online portal, and it's very brief, it's very abbreviated, you know, it's very limited in how you can justify and rationalize your name, which means you have to be very precise in your wording, right? Which, you know, I kind of applaud them for that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, once you're in the system, you can add to the file,
okay.
right? And so, you know, this is kind of critical because it means that letters of support and other information that might be relevant can be provided. And so Jennifer particularly said, look, you know, it sounds kind of like a pretty piece of rock. Maybe you can send some photos. And I said, I'd love to, right? And so I put together some nice photos of Buzzard Butte, close-ups, you know, showing the butte from different sides and showing the ascent gully that I used on the southeast side. And then I also got some pictures showing it, like, from the Nankweep Trail. And then the coup de grace was I was reading the New Yorker magazine one day.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the New Yorker, there's a two-page spread produced by the Arizona Chamber of Commerce or Travel Tourism Agency or something like
right.
that, you know, promoting Arizona travel. And it's a picture of Eastern Grand Canyon from Desert View.
Huh.
Looking out across the whole canyon, the eastern part of the Grand Canyon, and there's this family, you know, poised on the edge, you know,
right.
taking pictures. It's very wholesome. And there, right in the middle of this two-page spread, there's Butchered Butte
oh, wow.
sitting out there,
huh.
right? Out all alone in this commanding presence. It's like it's like out on its own, right? And
huh.
And so I scanned this and I sent it to Jennifer along with my other photographs. And I said, look, I mean, everybody can see this butte. You know, everybody who visits Grand Canyon is going to see this, and it's a very fitting tribute for a person of Harvey's stature. So she's very appreciative and receptive to receiving all this material, right? And and at the same time, I was now in contact with the representative for the Arizona State Board of Geographic Names, right?
Uh-huh.
It's Arizona State Board of Geographic and Historic Names. So her name was Julie Hoff, JulieHoff. And again, she was also very, very helpful and provided me with a lot of input on the process and the events that were taking place. So in mid-January, she wrote me and said, look, on the 23rd of January 2008, the Arizona State Board, it's going to have its formal initial review. And typically, she said, the board takes two formal reviews before they vote on it, right? So there'd be two different meetings. And because they had just briefly discussed it in the previous November, that didn't really count as the initial review. This was going to be on the agenda as a specific item that would then kickstart the process, the formal review process from the Arizona State side. And so she said that will take place on January 18th. And of course, the upshot is that the Arizona State Board would not be making any decision then until its April meeting, because that would be the second meeting that it would have a formal review
okay.
of it. So I said, fine, you know, that sounds great. And on January 23rd of 2008, the Arizona Board held its meeting, and Butchered Butte is listed on the agenda as docket 2007-17. Now, interestingly, my friend Art went down to this meeting in downtown Phoenix, and he made a presentation there.
Oh, cool.
He showed some pictures of Butchered Butte, and he talked about Harvey's accomplishments and how he was a mentor to so many people, and you know, he just discussed very important aspects of the whole process. And I guess it made quite an impact on the board, because a couple days later I wrote to Julie Huff, and I said, what was the result of the meetings? And she said, I'm quoting here, the board quite, quote, enjoyed Mr. Christensen's presentation. He certainly impressed upon the board Harvey Butchert's contributions to Grand Canyon exploration, with an exclamation point.
So, okay.
Yeah, so Art, you know, did his duty, and he certainly did Harvey proud in that initial meeting. And so actually Julie didn't have Art's contact information, so I was able to connect her directly with him at that point.
Cool.
So it was about this time now that I started connecting with Elias Butler.
Okay.
Who was writing a biography with Tom Myers, I believe, about Harvey.
Right. So that would have been, that's Eli Butler.
Okay.
And the book that they published would have been Grand Obsession.
Right. And it's a wonderful book too.
Where were they? Did you contact Eli, or did he get wind of this and contact you?
No, he got wind of this through Art, and I think Eli somehow contacted Art.
Okay.
Because I didn't know Eli.
Okay.
And he contacted Art somehow. I don't know how. Probably through a mutual contact. But you know, he knew that Art had been doing a lot of hiking and was kind of Harvey's era and vintage, and so, not that, you know, Art's not Harvey's age by any means, but but he overlapped because he's been hiking in the Grand Canyon since the early 60s. And so, Eli got in touch with Art, and Art said, well, you should also talk to Jim Haggard, you know, and he said, Jim's even putting together a proposal to name a feature after Harvey. So at that point, Eli, I call him Elias. I never knew that he went by Eli, but
okay.
That shows you. I only met him one time formally and in Flagstaff at his house. We had a really nice visit.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah. But anyways, I emailed with Eli, and then of course we had this visit at his house. So he was asking me, well, what's going on with the application, you know? I mean, what do you know what the latest is? And I said, well, you know, I told him where I thought things were at, you know. I didn't have a really precise handle on everything, because a lot of the detail I'm giving you now is what I've learned from reviewing all the correspondence that I now have available. And a lot of that has just come to me from Jennifer Runyon recently.
Okay.
So, Elias did get, in fact, on his emails to me, he always signed them Elias.
Huh.
So, I guess, maybe his other friends, he went by, you know, on
yeah.
his email, he
yeah.
went by
totally
Eli
understood.
On, but yeah, anyways, it doesn't matter. We got along just fine, but I said, look, you know, if you're really interested in this, why don't you send in a letter of support to Jennifer Runyon add it to the file, right? And he says, okay, I'll do that. And he says, you mind if I send in other people's, or have other people do that? And I said, no, of course not. You know, the more the better, for the reasons we talked about earlier. So he said he would do that. And he started, you know, talking to people in the local community. And so, let's see, a little bit of time went by to the end of February. And then at this point, Art wrote me an email, and he said that he'd been on the web. And he went to the website of the Coconino County Board of Supervisors, and that there was a summary there of their February 5th meeting, in which they unanimously agreed to a motion to provide their consent for the new name of Butchert Butte. So at that point, you know, we had some positive development here. We had a formal agency, Coconino County, which had said, this is great, unanimously, they're in favor of allowing this name to go forward. So that was a positive development. And again, my correspondence, or what I've got from the board, Coconino County Board, is a formal notice from the clerk of the board, who was named Wendy Escoffier, and that is forwarded to U.S. Bureau of Geographic Names.
How do you spell stating, Wendy's last name? Sorry.
Yeah, it was Escoffier.
Okay, and so she sent the notes of the meeting and their vote to the board.
Yeah, well, this was the county board.
Yeah,
Coconino County Board, and they would have forwarded that then to the Arizona board.
Okay.
Yeah, so you know, things are starting to move along. We're starting to get some formal support here.
Yeah,
and it was during this time in, well, I think it was in March and April when Eli sent his letter of support in, and another fellow named Peter Boremans sent a letter of support in too. Now Peter is in
Boremans.
Boremans.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know Peter, but you know he put together a nice little letter.
Peter's a longtime Grand Canyon hiker, I think.
Yeah. I've heard the name. I definitely have heard the name, but I don't know him personally. So, okay. So also in mid April, I started receiving more email from Elias. And it was communication. It was basically me being CC'd on communication that he was having with Tom Myers. And again, it just said Tom. It would always say Tom, but because the email handle was GCDoc1, I assumed it was probably Tom Myers.
That's right. That's his email handle.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, and they were sending letters of support not only to the board, the U.S. board, but also to a fellow named Mark Yeston, MarkYeston. And Mark is at National Park Service.
He was at Grand Canyon National Park, and wasn't he the backcountry district ranger?
I have no idea.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. I mean, this was correspondence they were having, and I was being CC'd, you know, because I was involved in this naming proposal, right? And, and they just wanted to have everybody aware of what was going on. Email's great for that. You know?
Yeah, and
really
Yeston is, Yeston is very familiar with the backcountry, very familiar with Harvey and Harvey's role and his hiking. So that was very fortuitous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's good to hear because we needed this we needed this support down the road here. So so what's next here? So the next thing that came along was on April 16th. That's when the Arizona board held its next meeting, okay? So this would be the second formal meeting. It's actually technically the third time it's come up for discussion, Butchered Butte, but it's the second time that it's been formally debated. And interestingly, I got an email, so I'm up here in Vancouver, you know, trying to keep abreast of all these events and sometimes, you know, abreast of events after they've taken place, but at least, you know, knowing what's happened. And so on the 15th of April, the day before the meeting, I got an email from Julie Huff, who again is the representative for the state board, saying, why don't you come down to the meeting tomorrow in the conference, the state library conference room. And, you know, you can participate. And, well, of course, I'm up here in Vancouver, so I graciously thanked her for the invitation, but had to decline. And my thinking is that Art was at this meeting, too, because he definitely attended two of these board meetings to make presentations. And so, interestingly, so the April 16th meeting, the result was this summary, I guess. I had heard, okay, my what I wrote to Mark Yeston and Tom Myers and Elias and Bill Vandegraaff, who was another player in this, and I don't know Bill.
Backcountry ranger, a good friend of Tom Myers.
Okay.
Well versed in Harvey, knew Harvey in Flagstaff. And Bill is a corridor ranger at Phantom Ranch, certainly a backcountry ranger.
And okay.
Solid
credentials then.
Yeah. His name is Bill, not Bill. So he's known as 1L Bill.
Oh, 1L Bill. Well, I saw that on the email, and I thought, well, maybe it's a typo or something. You never know, right?
Yeah.
But I did see it in several places as 1L, so I assume that's how he spelled it. 1L Bill, huh?
Vanderdergraff. Is that right?
Yes, that's the way I have it.
Okay.
Yeah. So now I don't know where I had gotten this information from. Maybe it was Julie Huff directly, but I had written to Yestin, Myers, Butler, and Bill, and I said. I said I heard the proposal was not voted on at yesterday's meeting, so this would have been the April 16th meeting of the Arizona State Board of Geographic Names, as they did not yet have any document from NPS endorsing the proposed name. Thus, they deferred their final decision until their July meeting. So, you know, it was kind of interesting because that same day, I have other email correspondence from these guys saying that the superintendent's letter of support for the proposal is on its way to D.C. And furthermore, in that letter it says, or in that email, this would be from Mark Yestin, Mark's email, he says, though there's reluctance to name features within wilderness designated or proposed, the support of park management apparently carries some weight, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that what had happened was it was Steve Martin, I believe, was the superintendent.
Okay, so the stars were all aligning. Steve Martin was a river ranger in the 1970s, returned to Grand Canyon in the early 2000s as a superintendent. So he had worked his way over to D.C. and up and down this and that and came back. He knew Harvey, knew of Harvey's hiking in the canyon. So now you've got all the stars lined up in the Park Service.
Yeah. Okay. So he was superintendent at that time.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but apparently, you know, the letter had not yet been transmitted to the Arizona State Board yet. So
okay.
It was just probably within days of being so. But
okay.
Because they didn't have it at the State Board, they felt like they couldn't make the final decision on this because, after all, it is in a national park, et cetera, et cetera. So okay, you know, we'll wait till the next board meeting, you know, and see how things go. And so I'm thinking to myself about this time, I'm thinking, well, it's mid-April now. You know, this is basically 8 months since I sent in this proposal. And that's how much time Lou Yost told me that they typically take to make these decisions. So, but we weren't anywhere near it because it wasn't even being considered yet at the U.S. board level. By the way, am I spending too much time on details
no,
here?
No, this is great. Detail
okay,
is good.
Okay. So anyways, you know, and every time you get one of these, it's postponed, it's like, oh, another disappointment, you know. And you know that any time somebody come along with some ammunition, some bureaucratic ammunition, and shoot this thing down. So you want to get as far through the system
right.
as you can, as fast as you can.
Right.
Right? So anyways, we're all kind of disappointed and kind of on pins and needles, too. So, you know, the next day I emailed Julie and I said, okay, so when's the next Arizona board meeting taking place? And she told me July 16th. Is when, you know, the board will be meeting again, and it'll definitely be on the agenda, and hopefully we will have, you know, letters of support from the National Park Service, et cetera, et cetera, and the decision can then be made. And so, and she was holding her cards close to her chest. She wasn't saying anything about how, oh, well, the discussion around the table is that, you know, it's a no-brainer, right?
Right.
Or the discussion around the table is, well, it's never going to fly. You know,
right.
She was
let's
not
see what the Park Service
giving
says, and we're not going to do anything until we hear from them. And yeah,
exactly. So, you know, I have to say these the people that I interacted with in this, I remember distinctly thinking that they were all so dedicated and true to the ideals of the whole process. You know, everything went through as it should, in a very formalized process, and I felt like it was everything was treated above board and fairly and openly. I know I didn't get all the information that was being generated about minutes of meetings, et cetera, but you know they weren't required to send me all that simply because I was a proponent of a name, right? Mm-hmm. Anyways, I just want to make the comment that all these people, Jennifer Runyon, Julie Hoff, they really were very polite and very supportive and very positive to interact with, and so that was a really great side benefit of this whole procedure, right? To see how this system works, and it's like you think about a lot of places around the world where things are named and maybe they're never named, or they're named after some crony of a government employee or something like that. I think that's kind of the way it was in Grand Canyon in the early 20s, but now it's much more formalized, and I feel like it's a very commendable process, and I just wanted to pass that along to the people that might be listening here. So
cool.
So anyways, just to follow up on this, then I had more communication with Elias, right? He and I were kind of tearing our hair out over this, right? We wanted this to go through, but we knew we could only go through at the glacial, to us, glacial pace of government bureaucracy. So anyways, around in mid July, the 16th of 2008, the board, the Arizona State Board, had its next meeting, and this was the fourth meeting that Butchert Butte would have come up at. The third time it was to be addressed formally.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, Julie wrote me the next day, and I wrote her actually asking for an update on the 17th of July. I said, what happened at yesterday's board meeting? And she wrote and she said, well, interestingly, Elias Butler brought in a petition that he had generated, signed by, I counted them up because I got a copy of this from Jennifer Runyon, signed by 29 citizens of Arizona, and in support of the name. And she said that, quote, the Arizona board voted in favor of Butchert Butte 6-1-0, and that as of yesterday, the name Butchert Butte is official in Arizona. So
wow.
That was pretty positive at that point, because what that was telling me was that it's an official name in Arizona. So how can the feds,
right,
not endorse it or embrace it, right?
Right.
And so but you never know, you never know. It could be what Julie explained to me was that, okay, because it's an official name in Arizona now, it can go on, Arizona state maps.
Got it.
But not necessarily, they can't put it on federal products, which makes sense. So, but at least was making its way through the system. And that was a positive development. So,
okay.
And also at this time, Julie was able to forward me the, copy of the letter from Steve Martin, which was actually, it was not dated for some reason. It was not dated until July 21. So it was dated after this board meeting at which the Arizona State Board made a decision. But I can think of is that they had some sort of informal email communication or something like that they were going on. And they subsequently received a formal letter
down the line.
Yeah. So, in any event, that's the way it unfolded.
What did the letter from the superintendent say? Do you have it there? Can you read it?
Yeah, it's a memo. I can find it here in a second. Yeah, it's actually very nicely written. Very nicely written, I remember. It was fairly a little long. Yeah. Bear with me here.
No worries.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Do you want me to read it to you?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is from, U.S. Department of Interior, National Park Service, Grand Canyon National Park, GC, Arizona. And for electronic transmission only. Well, that's interesting. And it says, memorandum to the chief of policy, WASO, and I'm not...
WASO, that's the Washington Office for the Park Service. So that's
okay.
Where the secretary, where the director of the Park Service has their office in the Department of Interior's building.
Okay. And then it says, through the regional director of Intermountain Region,
okay.
Michael D. Snyder, and then it gives the date 7/21/08, right?
Okay.
And from Superintendent Grand Canyon National Park, and subject, okay. Butchert Butte. So Steve, the superintendent, wrote five really succinct, nice paragraphs here. I'll read them to you. Perhaps no figure of the 20th century added more to the annals of Grand Canyon exploration than the late Dr. Harvey Butchert. A recent proposal to designate a presently unnamed geographic feature as Butchert Butte is, in my view, appropriate. Butchert's compulsive exploration of the Grand Canyon spanned over 42 years. During that time, he hiked, climbed, and scrambled over 12,000 miles within the canyon's depths, pioneered 108 approaches to the Colorado River from the rims, and climbed 83 summits. Butchert also became the first person known to walk across Grand Canyon National Park. As a professor of mathematics at Northern Arizona University and leader of the school's hiking club, Butchert introduced many to the canyon. His painstaking documentation of his travels proved priceless for other notable canyon explorers such as Colin Fletcher. No serious canyon enthusiast's library is complete without Butchert's Grand Canyon treks. His papers, maps, and prodigious notes are maintained at the Klein Library and continue to represent a priceless resource for researchers and Grand Canyon aficionados alike. The unnamed feature, proposed to be renamed as Butchert Butte, is located in an area that was well explored by Butchert. His successful climbs of nearby Siegfried Pyre, Cochise, and Glarus Buttes, Gunther Castle, and extensive explorations of Lava Canyon area make this a fitting locale. The rugged beauty and remoteness of the proposed butte reflects the type of feature that so appealed to Butchert and drove his seemingly inexhaustible quest to finish what no human possibly could in a single lifetime. The butte's visibility from the rims is also befitting. Visitors will be reminded of his unparalleled contribution to the knowledge and understanding of Grand Canyon, as well as his unique place in canyon history. I offer my full enthusiasm and support to this public effort to recognize one of Grand Canyon's most noteworthy modern explorers, Steve Martin. So, you know, really, really great letter.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah, you bet.
Very well written. And you know, at some point, I guess the Arizona board got this or a draft of it.
Right.
And they, you know, threw their weight behind it then.
Yeah.
So, at this point, we were feeling pretty good, right? And interestingly now, I got, you know, people started sending me newspaper clippings and whatnot, and somebody sent me a short article which was headlined, Butte Named for Legendary Canyon Hiker, and this appeared in Grand Canyon News, which I think is out of Williams, Arizona.
That's right.
And it, yeah, it was dated July 30th, 2008, and so that's about 2 weeks after the board had made it, the Arizona State Board had made its decision. So, and the article has a picture of Harvey and et cetera. Nice article about him and saying that the butte has been named. So this is sounding really positive, right? So, we're going to just wait now for the next meeting of the U.S. board, and hopefully it's all going to fall into line. Well, hold on. Wait a minute. So in early August, I get an email from Elias, and he says, someone has submitted a proposal to name the Jicarilla Point Arch after Harvey. So this person was proposing the name Harvey Butchert Bridge, or no, a Butchert Natural Bridge, I'm sorry, for the arch, which is at Jicarilla Point. And, you know, this proposal was done just the way I'd done mine, I assume. It went into the online portal, and it was published in the quarterly review list, number 398, so two quarterly review lists after the Butchert Butte proposal was identified.
Okay.
And so this then kind of raised another issue, right? Because now it's like, well, at the federal level at least, you know, there's two competing proposals. And So, anyways, it kind of started, another level of concern and worry, right? And so, now here's some interesting correspondence. So, on August 15th, 2008, the chair of the Arizona State Board, so this fellow, his name is Eugene Trobia, or Trobia, Trobia. He wrote to Lou Yost, who again was the executive secretary of the U.S. board, and he informed him officially that the state had approved the name, the state board had approved the name Butchert Butte, right?
Okay.
He said, he noted here that that none of the five tribal governments who had been invited to comment actually did so. So that's kind of interesting that there wasn't any feedback from the Native Americans. And then, okay, here it is. The chair of the Arizona State Board also noted that although they had received an unofficial letter of support from the superintendent of Grand Canyon National Park, no formal acknowledgement of the naming proposal had yet been received from National Park Service.
Ooh.
Okay, so that's where, they made their decision based on this informal communication from Steve Martin, but that had not been formally vetted through the National Park Service as a whole, right? So
Uh-huh.
here's a situation where the bureaucracy was kind of getting in the way, right? And so there's a pointed statement in here. He says, no formal acknowledgement of the naming proposal had yet been received from NPS when we had our meeting, even though, quote, the park and the USNPS had 10 months to consider and respond to the proposal, end quote. And then, furthermore, quote, the board has already deferred a decision twice while waiting to hear from the USNPS, end quote. So, there's a certain level of exasperation that you can read in there, right?
Yeah.
Basically, the state board saying, we waited for you guys, we gave you plenty of time, but you couldn't get your act organized, so we went ahead and did it anyway. You know what I mean? And so, I commend that because at certain times when you're dealing with the bureaucracy, you just have to kick it and just make your decision and go on, right? So, anyways, that communication then was transmitted to the U.S. board, and presumably then that gave the U.S. board the go-ahead to proceed with docketing this naming proposal formally on the agenda of an upcoming meeting. So, this email from Elias Butler came to me about the Butchert Natural Bridge proposal came to me in August, early August, on the 7th. And I was in the field in northern BC, and I had no communication, right, with the office or anything. And so it wasn't until the very end of the month when I actually got this email and was able to read it and find out about the new proposal for a Butchert commemorative name. And on the 29th of August, I wrote a long email to Jennifer Runyon, and I discussed the merits of the two features, and I said I've tried to be as objective as I could, given that I was the proponent of one of them.
Right.
But basically, I said, if as a feature that is named to commemorate the career and the life and the explorations of an individual, Butchert Butte, the Butte we're proposing, is hands down better than this arch. And I said nobody, can even see this arch because it's way west of any road access. And I said something like probably only 50 people have ever seen this arch in modern times,
Right.
right? Obviously, First Nations have been all over that area. I mean, there's the petroglyphs and everything around
Right.
there. But the point is that Butchert Butte is a much more significant statement and presence, and it is much more reflective of Harvey's contributions overall. So these are the arguments I made, right? And Elias actually sent along a photograph that he took of the natural arch. And I guess he had Tom Myers standing on top of it, and it looks, I mean, you can see it's pretty impressive, but it's not that big a deal.
No, it's pretty small. I mean, as arches go, it's a yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, you know, we hoped that that would be some supporting evidence or information that would help, you know, sway the decision of the U.S. Committee. And so so then at that same time, I get an email back from Jennifer Runyon, and she said, okay, the next meeting of the U.S. board is on September 3rd, and Butcher Butte is on the agenda.
Okay.
And she said, quote, the BGN does not typically like to approve names for unnamed features in wilderness areas, but in this case, both the state and the National Park Service have agreed that an exception appears to be warranted. And then she said, you know, there's a second Butcher naming proposal that's on the books now as well, and it's going to be on the next on the November meeting of the board.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm starting to think to myself, okay, well, it sounds like a delay building up here, right? Or and so that's exactly what happened. So on September 3rd, the U.S. board held its 701st meeting, and they had a discussion of Butcher Butte. And it's interesting because there's the minutes. I'll read you some of the minutes. It says Fagan, and I think that's Chick Fagan, who was a National Park Service representative on the committee.
Okay.
Fagan, F-A-G-A-N, offered to explain the National Park Service's justification for supporting a commemorative name in a wilderness area, which led to a discussion of when exceptions to the wilderness naming policy might be warranted. Well, I think this is kind of interesting because it's kind of like forcing people in this committee to kind of codify, you know, when exceptions need to be
right considered.
To be had, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so they probably had never dealt with that to a great extent. Maybe they did with Berry Butte or Roosevelt Point or something like that. But here it's coming up again. And so, you know, anytime you have rules, you typically have to have exceptions to rules, right?
Right.
So anyways, subsequently in the minutes it says, quote, a motion was made and seconded to defer a decision on this proposal, citing the existence of a second application on review list 398 to name another feature in the Grand Canyon National Park in honor of Mr. Butchert. The Arizona Board on Geographic and Historic Names will be discussing the Butchert Natural Bridge proposal at its November meeting. So it's now back to the Arizona board, right? I mean, dependent on them. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, and apparently that was, that motion then was voted 7 in favor, 1 against, with 2 abstentions. And the one who voted against said, well, it says the negative vote was cast in the belief that there was sufficient evidence and justification to proceed with the vote. So that person, I don't know who it was, but they probably were saying, look, we've got enough information here about Butcher Butte. It makes sense. Let's
right.
go ahead and do
let's,
it.
Let's
right?
go ahead and do it. I don't support this motion to wait.
Right,
got
right.
It.
So anyways, back to the waiting, right? So let's see here. My next point here is so Jenny Runyon writes to me, and she's basically confirming the results of the September 3rd meeting. And
okay.
She said that, quote, the Arizona Names Board is scheduled to take up the second proposal, i.e. Butchert Natural Bridge, at its next meeting sometime in November. The BGN, that's the U.S. Fed agency,
right.
wished to delay its vote until we receive the state's recommendation on Butchert Natural Bridge and then have us present the two proposals concurrently at the following meeting.
Okay.
Okay, so further, she stated, the BGN's member from the National Park Service also requested additional time to ask the park superintendent if he still supports naming the butte in view of the second proposal. Okay.
Got it.
So they're going to go back to Martin and say, look, you've got a proposal here for Butcher Bridge. Do you still want to go ahead with Butcher Butte? And I mean, we can only at this point hypothesize what happened, but I think if I was Martin, I'd probably be saying, Can't these guys make a decision?
Right.
You know, this is old history. I got more important things to deal with. You know, these low flying planes and et cetera, et cetera. Anyways, at that point, things kind of went quiet from my end. I don't have much information, so there was a lot apparently discussion back and forth. You know, apparently the Arizona board had a discussion about Butchert Natural Bridge. I'm going to try and track down those minutes and see if I can find out what they said, you know. But the next thing I have is basically the minutes of the 709th meeting of the U.S. Board of Geographic Names, which was held on May 27th of 2009.
Okay.
So we're now basically a year and...
Right.
8 months, a year and 8 months after,
right.
Or 10 months after the
so,
proposal.
So clearly
went
the state met, talked about it in November. That kick must have been kicked back to BGN, who eventually addressed it in May.
Yes, exactly. And so the agenda item basically has it's docket review item 2. Disagreement on docketed names contained record of discussion of proposed names. And proposed names, Butchert Butte and Butchert Natural Bridge. So I'm just reading you the text on the
do you have,
on the minutes.
Jim, do you have any way of knowing whether the bridge people knew about the Butte people?
They did. They did, because I corresponded with the bridge person. And I said, it's great that you want to honor Harvey. I'm paraphrasing because I don't have that email in front of me. But I said, it's great that you want to honor Harvey, but we've already got a proposal in the process. And I explained where it was. You know, I sent him the pictures and everything. And he said, well, I don't think yours is any better than mine, and I'm going to go ahead with it.
Huh. Can you name who that person was?
Well, I can't right now because I've forgotten, quite
okay.
honestly.
Okay, very good.
I'm
just like, who was that?
Yeah, I have a name here that I think it is, but I have to go find the email. All right.
Okay.
And because he wrote an article about Butchert Natural Bridge for a travel magazine in Arizona, and so I mean it's a nice little article about, you know, hiking out to this bridge, and you know, which he calls it that. And anyways. Let me confirm that name, and I'll get back to you. I thought it was a little cheeky, and actually, Elias said this guy's proposal is daft. He used that word daft, you know. So anyways, you know, we weren't too concerned, quite honestly. I felt like, you know, Butchert Butte had it hands down over Butchert Natural Bridge, but you never know until the dust settles, right?
I can kind of see where it's coming from. It's like, hey, we can do a bridge for Harvey, and like I say, you know, my proposal for a bridge is no worse than your proposal for a butte. So I kind of get that. Huh?
And he definitely said, you know, why can't we have two?
Yeah.
Why can't we have two things named after
a
bridge
and a
butte, right? So, I mean, that was his position, and it's fine. But I felt it was pretty unlikely that the government would, you know, break their policy, make an exception for their policy of not naming features in wilderness areas for two features for the same person. I felt that was unlikely, but that was just my perspective on it. So, but we didn't have to worry too long, because in May 27th, we had this meeting. The U.S. BGN had this meeting, May 27th, 2009. And so it's got, you know, disagreement on docketed names containing record of discussion of proposed names, Butchert Butte and Butchert Natural Bridge. It says, regarding Butchert Butte, the minutes state, quote, after considerable discussion, I like that considerable. What's hidden in that, you know? After considerable discussion regarding the merits of the proposal and whether it warranted an exception to the wilderness policy, a motion was made and seconded to approve this new name. 10 in favor, 1 against, 0 abstentions. The negative vote was cast in the belief that there was no overriding need to make an exception to the aforementioned policy. And then the minutes go on further, and they say, regarding Butchert Natural Bridge, quote, a motion was made and seconded not to approve this name, citing the previous decision for Butchert Butte, which the committee felt had accomplished the sense of commemoration. So, and that vote was 10 in favor, 1 against, and 0 abstentions. And again, the negative vote was cast in the belief that the individual was a significant enough to warrant the approval of both names. So somebody agreed with that fellow and said, yeah, well, why not name both, you know, features after him?
Got it.
So anyways, that which would have been fun, you know, it would have been neat that there was a second thing, you know, that
I mean, there's Boucher Rapid and there's Boucher Trail and Boucher Canyon. So,
there you go.
There's other people in the canyon that have multiple named geographical features named after them.
Yeah. So, you know, it took what, a year and 10 months or something like that, but it finally came through. And so the saga kind of ended for me when I received a letter at my mother's house, because that's the address I used to submit when I submitted the whole proposal. I used my home address being my mother's Scottsdale address. I don't know why I didn't use my Canadian address, but I probably figured that, maybe it had to be a U.S. citizen. And I just thought if they saw a Canadian address, then they'd wonder if I was a U.S. citizen or not, which I am. I'm
yeah,
dual citizenship.
Yeah,
I was born in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
So anyways, I got this formal letter from Lou Yost, who basically started the whole process with, you know, almost 2 years prior. And he basically confirmed that Butchert Butte had been approved as the official name at the May 27th, 2009 board meeting, and that Butchert Natural Bridge was not approved. So so at that point, you know, I'm sure I had a celebratory glass of wine with my
sure.
wife.
Yeah.
You know. But the story's not over.
Okay.
Okay. And I don't know, how are we doing on time? Oh, it's been quite a while, hasn't it? I can wrap this up quickly, but, you know, Elias finally finished his book.
Yep.
A very, very wonderful book, and he actually contacted me for information about the climb of Butchert Butte, and so he went out there with a couple friends, and climbed the butte in 2011, and my understanding is they scattered some ashes on the side.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. You know, I just read that in emails. I didn't read it in the account that Elias wrote for Arizona Highways or some magazine article. And but they climbed it, and you know, they commented about how it was extraordinary views, which it is. It really is tremendous. And I also want to raise the point here that, you know, Harvey had been in this area many, many times, and walked kind of all around, almost around Butchert Butte, but he never climbed it. You know, he didn't climb it because he was not interested in climbing unnamed buttes.
Didn't have a name, yeah.
Didn't have a name, so it was no interest in.
Right.
If you go to his notebooks for June 5th, 1969, he climbed Gunther Castle on that date.
Okay.
And he wrote in his notes, I'm gonna read you verbatim what he wrote in his notes. He said, it had taken us just 4 hours to go from the running water and lava to the top of Gunther. We were on top for an hour, admiring the views and eating an early lunch. One could spend a long time just soaking up scenery and identifying the points and pinnacles in sight from Gunther. We wondered why some fairly insignificant humps have names and others much more magnificent ones do not. Doc Ellis thought that Galeros Butte would be climbable, or at least worth the effort, but I thought that Cochise Butte would be more to my liking. It appears to be a mere walk-up. Well, Gunther is actually—it's to the southeast of Butchert Butte,
right?
By about, let me see. No, I'm sorry. It's due east of Butchert Butte by about 1.5 miles. And you know, sitting up on top of Gunther, you have this extraordinary view of all these buttes. And
right.
Harvey, no doubt, was looking at Butchert Butte as one of these significant buttes without a name, and wondering, why it would not have that. So
right.
That's the first little story I want to add to this this whole saga. And then the second story developed much more recently, a couple of years ago. So, you know, as a part of this Granitica symposium that we had 6 years ago now, I guess,
right.
on Grand Canyon climbing,
right.
I did a lot of research in the Huntington Library online archives looking for photos that Harvey had taken, et cetera. And I missed a particular photo that was quite compelling. And Art sent this to me in, let me see here, on May 23rd, 2019. So he sent this photo, and it's in the Otis Marston collection at the Huntington Library.
Yep.
And Art had found it online. It's a photo taken by Harvey on August 25th, 1970, and it's taken right at or near what we call Little Siegfried, which is a unnamed butte to the northwest of Siegfried Pyre, and about a mile due west of Butchert Butte. It's unmistakably Butchert Butte in the photograph.
Yep.
And the caption that Harvey gave, presumably Harvey gave to the Huntington Library for this photograph, states Maxon Butte, northeast of Siegfried Pyre.
Yep.
The Board of Geographic Names has been petitioned to give the butte the name of John H. Maxon.
That's right.
So, yeah, and it never happened,
right? And I don't know yet why, but Marston knew Maxon. Maxon had boated through Grand Canyon as a geologist and had studied the schist along the river.
Right.
Went with the California Institute of Technology river trip and walked.
That was 1937, wasn't it?
1937, 38, right in there. Yeah, maybe 37.
Yeah, yeah.
And Marston then took Maxon, well, boated with Maxon through Grand Canyon in the 1950s. They really hit it off. And after Maxon died, Marston tried to get what is today's Butchert Butte named for Maxon, the Grand Canyon geologist guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a great story of serendipity, you know,
yeah.
how Harvey took this picture.
Yeah.
And then...
Ends up being named for him.
And the butte ends up named being him for him. Yeah,
yeah.
For sure. It's such a great little story. Mm. So
it's very cool.
Yeah, that was the footnote I wanted to put on it. So
cool.
That's the story from my perspective of how the name Butchert Butte came to fruition. And I have to say, you know, that to me is a learning experience because I learned the complexity of the processes involved. You
right.
know? And I was working with another geologist, I believe he's a geologist, who was interested in naming a butte after Walcott.
Okay.
And this is it's a low butte, but it's very, very prominent down in the Moive. That's it's found on the divide between Char Creek and Basalt Canyon.
Okay.
And a very, very prominent butte from certain angles. And it's right in the Cambrian, right? And, of course, Walcott was a Cambrian geologist and paleontologist.
And was studying that rock in that area.
And he worked in that area, yeah, in 1907, I think, 1907-08. So I think this is a great idea, and I've communicated with this fellow and suggested, you know, ways that to get the process going. So we'll see what happens. But but you know, it's complicated and you just have to kind of wait it out.
And you got to have support from the Park Service, and you know, so it's got to be sort of apolitical. Yeah, it's quite the deal. Wow,
yeah.
What a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. Is there anything else about this you want to add? Otherwise, I think we'll wrap this up.
Well, I feel kind of talked out about it right now.
Okay.
I think I've hit the high point. So, you know, I'm glad you were to stick with me on this because it turned out to be longer than I expected. But,
yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, this will conclude part 29 of a Grand Canyon Oral History interview series with Jim Haggart. Today is Sunday, March 27th. 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and Jim, thank you so very much.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, Tom. I really appreciate it.